Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Major League Baseball has given the most accomplished players from Latin America the opportunity to become very wealthy. Major League Baseball has also saved a lot of money by staffing its farm systems with Latino players, almost all of whom will never reach the bigs. In Raceball, subtitled How the Major Leagues Colonized the Black and Latin Game, Rob Ruck describes how the game has become much less black and much more Latino over the past couple of decades, and he explores the implications of those developments. He prefaces that exploration with an account of how baseball became the passion of people in Cuba, the Dominican Republic, and Venezuela, among other Latin American countries. When we spoke earlier this week, he pointed out to me that although most people attribute the spread of baseball to the U.S. Marines, Army, and Navy, that theory of pollination is at best incomplete.
Well, I think that folks from the United States did introduce baseball in parts of Mexico. And I did used to think that the Marines had infected the region with baseball fever during their occupations early last century. But what I found was that the game began in Cuba very soon after it began in the United States, brought back to Cuba in the 1860s by boys who had studied in the United States and brought back the game as part of their cultural baggage. Cubans, in turn, spread the game elsewhere. There was a wise old gentleman in Santo Domingo, Pedro Julio Santana, who told me a number of years ago, as we stood looking out of his window at the first Catholic cathedral in the Americas where Columbus was reputedly buried, and he said that the North Americans can be thought of as the Jesus Christ of baseball, but the Cubans were the apostles who took the game and spread it out into the Caribbean.
Is it fair to say that the regional policies of professional baseball regarding Latin America have resembled the politics of the U.S. toward Latin America in general?
Well, they've been pretty one-sided. Historically, Major League Baseball has seen the Caribbean as a source of cheap talent, and they've signed hundreds of kids for a couple of $1,000 in signing bonuses, hoping that one or two out of every 100 would succeed. Getting guys like Pedro Martinez, Sammy Sosa, for a few $1,000 in signing bonuses. In more recent years, each major league club has established a year-round baseball academy in the Dominican Republic, several in Venezuela, where they train well over 1,000 kids in the Dominican alone who play in the Dominican Summer League, which is the largest league in baseball history. Now, those kids are an economic bargain for major league teams. And I think that historically, while there are a lot of good people in Major League Baseball who've done a lot of good down there, it's been a pretty one-sided relationship.
You researched the numbers of major league players from various backgrounds in various decades, at least the last three or four decades. Tell us about the trends those numbers demonstrate regarding African American players and Latin American players.
The integration of baseball in 1947 brought the greatest wave of talent into the game that it had ever seen. Eight Negro Leaguers soon played Major League Ball who would make it to the Hall of Fame. Another nine black players born before Jackie Robinson but who did not play in the Negro Leagues joined them. And by 1975, African Americans make up about 27% of all Major League Baseball players. At that time, the number of Latins is in single-digit percentages. Mm-hmm. But since 1975, there's been a demographic revolution. About two-thirds of all the black players in the majors have left the game, and they're down to about 8 or 9% today, while the number of Latins in baseball has continued to rise. Latins in the majors make up close to 30% of all players and almost half of all those in the minors, and we are really talking about the best players in the game today.
Can the relative decrease in African-American major leaguers be explained by the increase in opportunities in pro basketball and pro football and the fact that a lot of great young African-American athletes in this country and a lot of African-American fans as well just prefer basketball and football to baseball?
Sure. And I think that the opening of colleges and universities, particularly in the North in the 1950s and 60s, to black athletes to play basketball and football was a turning point. But I think that even before that happened, the integration of Major League Baseball crushed the Negro Leagues, as well as the Black Sandlot infrastructure. The Negro Leagues and the Black Sandlots were how a young black kid learned how to play baseball, picked up the skill, the muscle memory, the lure. And after integration, when that infrastructure disappeared, the only way for a black kid to learn how to play baseball was either in college or in the minors, and neither were particularly hospitable to black athletes for different reasons.
Despite the growing number of Latino players in the big leagues, you write that, and I'm quoting again here, the Latin brand in baseball has been badly buffeted in recent years. What does buffeted mean in that context, and what led you to that conclusion?
Some of the most prominent Latino ball players in the game today have been ensnared by the use of performance-enhancing drugs. During the 2009 season alone, Alex Rodriguez, David Ortiz, Manny Ramirez, of course, Sammy Sosa before that. The larger problem lies in the disproportionate number of particularly Dominican boys who are busted for steroid use in the minor leagues. And that gets back down to the islands and the academies and a group of agents known as Biscones, who all basically look at these kids as a profitable commodity.
How is what happens to Latin American kids under these circumstances different from what happens to youngsters coming up in, youngsters of any race coming up under other circumstances?
Well, I think there are parallels. I think there are parallels with the African kids who end up in European soccer academies, or a lot of the kids who end up in AAU basketball programs and go to schools on scholarship where the education is relatively bogus. I think, you know, the common denominator, whether it's an African kid, a kid from the inner city United States, or a kid in the Dominican Republic, Venezuela, or Nicaragua, is that they're usually poor, not very well educated, not particularly sophisticated about how the system works, and vulnerable as a result.
You mentioned the Buscones, the men who look for talent in places like the Dominican Republic and Venezuela. They used to be called bird dogs in this country when there were still scouts outside the Major League Scouting Bureau. But some of the people you talked to said that the Buscones do a lot of good as well. Juan Marichal said that. Make the case for as well as against the Buscones.
The Buscones take advantage of two Major League Baseball policies. First, only kids from Canada, Puerto Rico, and the United States are subject to the annual baseball draft. That means that kids elsewhere in the world begin their careers as free agents. Secondly, Major League Baseball a couple of years ago, after being terribly embarrassed when the Blue Jays signed a 13-year-old Dominican to a contract, have set an age minimum. They will not sign kids until the summer they turn 17. Now, a Buscone is somebody who will take a boy into his home or put him up in a pension, care for him, give him medical care, train him in how to play the game, and create a market for his services. Now, some of these guys are ethical, the best thing that ever happens to a boy. Others steal from the kid. And, of course, the Buscone, when the boy signs, might get 30% of his signing bonus and salary. Some will encourage the boy to take vitamins, which turn out to be veterinary steroids. Others manipulate the boy's birth documents so they appear younger, therefore appearing to have a higher upside from the agent's point of view. So, you know, there must be 1,000 to 1,500 men operating as Buscones, and they range from people who serve their kids well to those who wreck kids' careers and their health at the same time.
Most corporations tend to look for the cheapest labor they can find, and certainly Latino players who aren't subject to Major League Baseball's draft and the salary scale that has resulted from the draft are less expensive to sign than players in the U.S. One MLB executive told you he could sign 12 excellent Latino players for the price of one top African American prospect. Is it fair to say that Major League Baseball is just doing what any corporation does?
Well, I guess the question is, do we have any ethical expectations for businesses? Are we going to accept savage capitalism, or do we want a more humane, democratic kind of capitalism? And I would argue that Major League Baseball has benefited immensely from the Caribbean, from the kids of the Caribbean, from the fans in the Caribbean, and that they've got responsibilities that go beyond simply how much money they make. And, you know, I think it's important to remember that a lot of these kids are so desperate to make it professionally in baseball, their education ends at about the eighth grade. I know there aren't a lot of good alternatives for these kids in the first place, but I think that Major League Baseball, which is probably doing better as a business now than it ever has, can certainly redistribute a little bit of that wealth to ensure that these boys and those communities are getting a little more from their contribution to the game.
Rob, you write about the determination of former Major League stars like Juan Marichal, Felipe Alou, and Manuel Mota to, quote, restore the integrity of baseball in the Dominican Republic. How do you define that task of restoration?
Well, I think it's a Wild West right now, where you've got a lot of unscrupulous people taking advantage of kids in terms of drugs and fraud regarding ages and in signing contracts. Now, Major League Baseball, about a year ago, sent Sandy Alderson down there to become the new sheriff and clean things up. And he was talking about creating Major League Baseball organized youth leagues, fingerprinting and blood testing kids to verify identity and whether or not they were using drugs. And I think MLB would like to expand the draft to the Dominican. I think that it's a little pushy for MLB to come in and try to tell Dominicans what to do. I think that Dominicans need to take ownership of these issues.
What about the efforts of Major League Baseball to develop African American players through the program called RBI, Reviving Baseball in the Inner Cities? Is that program succeeding?
Well, RBI was a program started in 1988 by John Young, who had played Major League Ball from Compton, L.A., who looked around and saw that his community was no longer producing ball players. And he persuaded the gangs to leave kids alone, and he set up a program that has since been replicated in many areas. Probably the vanguard one is in Harlem, the Harlem RBI program. RBI has produced 200,000-plus kids who've gone through that program, and they get education and other training as well as learn how to play baseball. Now, they've also produced a lot of kids who made the majors. 2 years ago, 2009 World Series began with C.C. Sabathia on the mound throwing the ball to Jimmy Rollins, only the second time in baseball history that the series began with a black man throwing to a black man. Both Sabathia and Rollins came through RBI. So I think that there's great hope there. MLB has begun to sponsor it. They've committed to building 10 baseball academies in cities with major league teams. I think that's going to help, but I don't think there's any expectation that baseball will ever become what it once was. I think that Major League Baseball has been embarrassed by the decline of black players. I think they've also been hurt at the gate by not having that many black fans anymore. I mean, you go to a ball game, and black faces are usually pretty hard to find, which is a far cry from 1947 when the Brooklyn Dodgers set attendance records at home and on the road because of black fans.
Rob Ruck is the author of Raceball, How the Major Leagues Colonized the Black and Latin Game. The book is published by Beacon Press, and Rob Ruck joined me from WDUQ in Pittsburgh. Rob, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Well, thanks, Bill. I really appreciate it.
My conversation with Rob Ruck, the author of Raceball, will be featured in this week's program. I'll also be talking with Phil Sutherland. He's a diabetic who has integrated exceptional achievements as an athlete into the controlling of his disease. Phil is a competitive cyclist who co-founded Team Type 1, which is not only winning races, but educating people about diabetes all over the world. We'll be updating the efforts of the National Football League and its employees to work out an agreement that would enable them to continue doing business. And we'll also see if the NBA and that league's employees are likely to learn anything from the aforementioned alleged negotiations. Because if they aren't, in 4 months, their league will hit the same deadline the NFL faced this week. And finally, we'll have one of those stories everybody in a cold climate needs about now, as Only a Game's Karen Given visits a beach volleyball venue on a freezing night in New Hampshire. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.